This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All right, everybody, welcome back to PTBN Play on the PTBN Pop feed. This is Brad Woodling, and I've got Jordan Duncan with me again here. Jordan, how are you?
I'm doing great. I've been playing Atari all week.
That's a total lie. But yes, we are on to part two of our kind of the four defining games, the hashtag GameStruck 4, which, you know, I kind of noticed that the hashtag kind of died off on April 20th, and we do want these to kind of be in a vacuum, so yeah. We'll keep that for a little bit, but we are working our way chronologically through the video game consoles that we played as kids, young adults, and as adults with children now. Mm-hmm. And so we covered Atari 2600, and now we're ready to move to the big guy. And we're going to spoil it a little bit. It's going to be a big one, and that is the Nintendo Entertainment System, the NES. I really hope you call it the NES and not the NES. How do you pronounce it?
NES.
Okay, thank goodness. Whew. Honestly, I'm not sure we could be friends. It's like a political divide. I hear people say like SNES, and I'm like, what kind of animal are you? What was your upbringing? SNES. So the NES, and we are here with our four defining games. And that's a challenge, right?
Yes.
So it was hard. And so let's start with kind of our fond memories. So as a quick background, so Jordan and I are the same age, mm-hmm. and born in the same year, 1979. So I think it's personally a really cool year to be born in that area for video games, right?
Smashing Pumpkins wrote a song about it, our year.
They did. Mm-hmm. It's a great year to be born because the NES comes out late in 85, really like nationally like 86.
Yeah.
And so we're 7, and then 87 is a big year for releases. So we're 8 years old, and our friends have Nintendos, and that's what we talk about at recess or before second grade, you know. So I'm going to start with you. So, Jordan, tell us your background with the system and some of your fonder memories, and then I will do the same then.
So what's interesting about us is we were, you know, you said that big boom was 86. I don't think we got the NES until 87. But at the same time, we were one of the first ones in our neighborhood to have it. So even though we were kind of late to the game in terms of the boom, we were the first ones around to get it. And my parents didn't actually buy it for us. My brother saved up his paper route money, not from playing the game Paperboy, available on the NES, but his paper route money, and bought it. And I was thinking about the NES because we just did Atari's podcast, which you can listen to on our pop feed. And I think my first reaction to the NES was just amazement. Because, you know, growing up, video games, you know, we see the different systems that come out. You know, we're on PlayStation 4 is what I am. I don't know if you're an Xbox or a PlayStation guy, but, you know.
We are friends on PlayStation.
That's true. So, some people have both, and they just...
Sure, one another, sure.
You know, but, you know, next to come is, I guess, PlayStation 5 or something. And there will be a difference, and, you know, there will be some improvements. But I don't think anything will ever match the change from Atari to NES, that leap. And that's, like, my first thought that jumps out when I think of the NES is just the awe I had when my brother turned on that game for the first time. And I didn't see dots, or as you said in our Atari show, things that look like penises on the screen.
Right.
You know? Like,
right.
Like, it was like, that's an actual thing. I can tell what that's supposed to be. And it was just jaw-dropping, you know, like, holy crap. And from then on, I was hooked. I mean, that's when I became... lifelong gamer. We played the heck out of NES games. We had tons. I told you a story off the air. I had a cousin who worked at KB Toys in the mall. And, you know, as I told that story, I thought about it. I'm almost wondering now if he stole the games. But he told us that, you know, when people returned games or they went to, like, a discount rack or something, that employees could just take them home. And so he didn't have an NES, and he just gave us so many games. So we had a huge library of games, and not necessarily just popular games, but games, like, that are a little more obscure. And so... when making my list, you know, I have one game that I think is fairly obscure. I don't know. I feel like with Nintendo, there's not much that's that obscure, though. But a lot of my contenders are games that I don't think many would have ranked up there, because I love the games that not everybody knew, you know?
So. Sure. Yeah, you know that leap, and technically the Atari, and you know, and if you were using a home computer like a Commodore 64, those were technically 8-bit too. But again, 8-bit doesn't necessarily mean graphics. We're talking about the processing and all that stuff that goes into it. Because you're like, what? Right. That's not, because the Nintendo was a leap. And I talked a little bit on the Atari time about how I was most blown away by a controller with two buttons. Yep. Even just looking at, you know, ColecoVision controllers or the Atari 7800, 5200, like, these were just clunky messes. And then Nintendo comes along with a gamepad that is just sleek and two buttons. And yes, we don't have square controllers anymore. They made them round pretty quick. Like a couple years into the system, they came out with the dog bone controller when the top loader came out. And ever since then, they've been more ergonomic. It was just a sleek controller. And with two buttons, I used to think that, I mean, this game, like, there can't be bad games on the Nintendo. I mean, there's two buttons here, and everything must be good. And, you kind of learned that wasn't always it. But, you know, I was the same way as you, as I was hooked at it, and I had, you know, seen it at a neighbor's house, and I had really good friends that had Nintendos, and I was just obsessed with it. And I think my parents recognized that. And growing up, you know, they had a couple, like, really solid lies that they would tell us. One was that we didn't have money for a Nintendo. We did. So we played our Commodore 64. And two was our street doesn't have cable. That also was why it did. Right, like, it didn't have it wired. Because, you know, we lived, you know, kind of in, I mean, it was, there were people on our street, but it wasn't like a development. So it was kind of like, oh, you know, there's just no cable on our street. Okay. You know, so we had the antenna and that was it. And so with that, and that was a lie. And so I would be at friend's house and I would just, you know, I would pour over Nintendo powers and I was just blown away by this. Any chance I could play, I would. We would stay up like all night. Like literally, I don't think I've ever done that since then, but you know, being like a third or fourth grader.
Oh, yeah.
And being able to be like, yeah, I didn't go to sleep last night. I went to Chris's house and we just played Nintendo all night. And then I went home at the next day and then fell asleep at 2 o'clock, you know, and that was it. And that's what we did. And I was just, and I think they recognized that I was kind of super into it. So they were maybe afraid to get it or worried about, cause then too, and I don't know if you experienced this or not, just like you hear today about all these kids and games, which is why I never overreact to pieces about like Fortnite or whatever, because I go, you know, they said the same thing about Nintendo, you know, and my mom would tell me a story like, you know, Joshua's mom, she just threw his out because he just wouldn't listen and he was just all he wanted to do, you know. And so, and I would
Joshua
ask and ask.
Joshua probably beat every game he had. He's probably so good at them.
He was probably so good, you know, but yeah, they parents would get kind of fed up on it and they didn't really get it and they kind of became like an obsession, right? Just like, you know, any little kids, you know, see that kind of stuff, you're going to be kind of obsessed. That's all that's all you wanted to think about. So that was, did you have any similar stories to that?
Oh yeah. You know, as you were talking about it and talking about kids with today's stuff, like I have two boys and they're both hardcore into gaming. And you mentioned the overnight thing. There's some stuff that today's generation of gamers will never really get to experience the joy of. Did you ever rent games for the weekend?
Oh, sure.
That was just
the best. I'm going to talk a little bit about that.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And as we get into the next systems, I remember pooling our money together and we'd have to beg the parents because we'd have to put down like a $100 deposit, which you'd get back to rent systems like the Super Nintendo or the Sega Genesis for the weekend, which was like a big deal.
Sure.
But the other thing that you mentioned was the remote was so different than the Atari. And it brought into my brain, there was a few remotes for the Nintendo. Were you just a standard remote guy, or were you an NES Max guy, or NES Advantage?
I have a weird thing where, like, not really big on arcade sticks. I have them, I'm not really sure why, but, like, I don't like, the Advantage is first off, it's not a great controller. It doesn't map well. It's just not a good controller. So that's kind of like, again, they're trying to emulate the arcade feel. It's poorly made. And I never had a Max controller. I used mainly the regular ones, but they came out with a lot of derivatives of that. Just like, that was all the rage back then too, was different controller types, and you had third party controller types and things like that too.
We had the NES Max, which had Turbo, which, you know.
Oh yeah, Turbo was pretty cool.
Yeah. So
Turbo was pretty cool. And then they had the, as I mentioned, they had the Dogbo controller. But I didn't know anybody that really had a top loader NES because it came out
late. That came around late. The same time as an SNES.
Yeah, it kind of followed their normal marketing, how it goes. You know, the system hits its peak, and then all of a sudden they have, you know, they release like a little budget version that doesn't have all the features that the main one did, and that kind of stuff. So
I think one advantage I may have had over you in terms of dealing with parents who were a little slow to get the games is my dad was a avid video game player for most of my childhood. You know, he played the Atari with us, and he liked the Nintendo. He wasn't very good, and he didn't have as much time to play. But what's funny is he stopped with the Sega Genesis. So he was right along with us with Nintendo, Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis, and then once N64 and PlayStation 1 hit, he just stayed with Sega and kept on playing Michael Jackson's Moonwalker while we moved on.
Yeah, it's funny. I had a similar story, too. So I assumed that my dad was, like, really into it when we were small kids or, you know, because he played Atari and stuff. But so he would play with us, and mainly it was, like, computer games. And so, like, we had a Commodore 64, and I think, like, back then, we talked a little bit on the Atari show about how kind of, like, there were so many, like, third parties and bootlegs and stuff. Oh, yeah. And with computers, there was just no copyright protection. All you did was take the floppy drive and bust that tab out, and then you could copy. So, you know, we'd come home, and he would just have, like, loads of like Commodore 64 games on floppies. I just flipped through, and I assume that he played them, you know, in what limited spare time he had with a small child, which we can both, you know, relate to nowadays. Right. But I always thought it was funny because later on in my gaming, where like for PlayStation and stuff, like, you know, we had, you know, maybe pirated a lot of games and whatnot. I was kind of like, you know, my dad used to do this back with the Commodore, you know, 15 years before. So, 10 years before, I guess. So, so we had that against it, and eventually I did get my own Nintendo, and I bought it myself. It was at a flea market. I still remember the flea market. I visited there up in my grandparents' house, and my sister and I pooled our money. The system was long past. I mean, I think this was like 92, 91, 90, 92, 93, maybe even. And so, like, I was already playing Genesis, but we didn't have one. So I think, like, there was a brief period where, like, I just finally had, like, my own Nintendo and a whole bunch of games to play through. And then I moved pretty quick to the next generation, which we'll save for a future call. So let's get to our four defining games here for the NES. Mm-hmm. And I will let you go first with the first one you want to talk about.
Sure. And it's also interesting that I mentioned my dad because my first entry is one, I think, my dad's all-time favorite game. And that's not really why I ranked it, although it does make me think of him. He passed away a few years back.
Sure.
But it was just a great game, and this is one that my cousin gave to us from KB Toys. I don't think we ever purchased it, but I went with Castlevania, number one. And I wanted to kind of cheat a little bit and rank all three Castlevanias, but I just went with the very first Castlevania. If you're a listener and you don't know Castlevania, it's a story of Simon Belmont, the vampire hunter, on his quest to find and kill Dracula. It's kind of a side-scroller, and the weapon of choice is the whip, but you can also get boomerangs and daggers and holy water and axes and I said daggers. And what I thought was cool about it was, you know, we're a family that grew up with scary movies, and I always liked monsters and things like that. And you fought Dracula was the main boss. You fought Medusa. You fought the Mummy. You fought Frankenstein. And so it was a game that was right up my alley, and it was a really good game for the time. Challenging. That's the thing about Nintendo. A lot of Nintendo games were very difficult, and it was kind of a thing where, as we get older, I'm sure you've done this before as well, you revisit a game that you couldn't beat in your childhood, convinced, like, now I could do it. And you still can't. You know, like,
I was doing that before our call today. I'm like, oh, I'll go back.
I still struggle with Dracula in Castlevania. It's one of the hardest final bosses in video games that I've ever played. But Castlevania was just a great game. Great music, which we didn't even talk about the music upgrade from Nintendo in Atari. But the music of Castlevania, just the setting and the layout and the monsters, was just a game perfect for me as a kid. And we played the heck out of that thing.
And I bet you, too, it really kind of pulled with your imagination. Like you said, you're really into monsters and stuff like that. So then you're looking at just the possibilities of what could be, like, the next level boss. You know, because back then there wasn't the internet. You weren't spoiled with YouTube previews right. or anything like that. It was just kind of like, you know, sometimes they say, like, you know, the anticipation or the idea of, like, thinking about something is can be equally as enjoyable as, you know, actually doing it then. And you spent a lot of time, you know, daydreaming with stuff like that. And certainly it was a challenging game because sometimes those games, you know, back then, they weren't particularly long, so they had to be challenging to make up for that. So you had some type of, unlike the Atari, where you could beat games in 20 minutes and that was it, you know, which really crashed the industry. They had to do something a little bit different here.
Where they really screw you in Castlevania and other games too is really to beat these bosses, you'd have to build up your health and get like the double health and like the triple shot special weapons. But then if you died and it's to put you back, you'd lose all that stuff.
Yeah,
so it's almost like you beat them your first chance or you're screwed, you know?
Yep. And there were no save game. Castlevania didn't have a save system in it.
Castlevania 3 did by the time 3 came around. But Castlevania 1, absolutely not. You sat down and you were going to beat it or it was going to beat you.
Yep. That's a great one.
Yeah, that was a good game. How about you, man? What's your number four?
So my number four-ish, if I want to number or label them, is actually going to be what I believe is the first Nintendo game I ever saw, and it's Mike Tyson's Punch-Out.
Oh, yes.
And so this was down
speaking
in the neighbor's
of hard
house.
Bosses.
Yes, speaking of very hard bosses. And so I think I'm pretty certain this is the first game I ever saw that was on Nintendo. And I know that it really what I remember it from is, and I played it quite a bit, was kind of like the spectator aspect of it. Like, I imagine today with Twitch and stuff, you could go on and be like, hey guys, I'm going to make a run up to Tyson, like log in, you know, check me out on my Twitch channel, because the game was, you know, it was fun to watch someone else play.
Yep.
You know, I would play with my buddy, and he was, like, particularly good at it. I mean, I can't ever remember. I don't think we ever beat, like, Sandman, or maybe it was Bald Bull, like, one of the, and, like, to get to Tyson. But I know he could get pretty close.
Yeah.
And he would indulge me, and I could play, like, the opening round. So I would, you know, beat Glass Joe, and I would beat Von Kaiser. And I'd be like, whoa, man, Von Kaiser was tough out there. We went to points, like, we draw after the third round. But the trick of it, not the trick, is that, you know, while it's boxing, I mean, essentially it's a pattern strategy game.
Yes.
It's a puzzle game. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a timing game completely down. Everything is timed out, and once you know how or you memorize how to beat it, you can beat it. Mm-hmm. That doesn't make Tyson incredibly hard still. And of course, we all had the code because that was in the magazine, so we would go up and play him and like see how.
0073735963.
See, you remember that as well as your social or your telephone number. You know, and it was so we talk about saving with Castlevania, but, you know, you could get, you know, if you beat that minor circuit, you get that code, so you could at least go back and start there. Mm-hmm. And so I just remember kind of just watching and playing that one. And that was one that I revisited I don't know, 6-7 years ago when I kind of got back into, you know, playing retro games. Well, I always had them and collected them, but I didn't have Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, and I re-got it. And I remember kind of sitting on the floor in my office and, like, beating the minor circuit and getting up to whatever, and still to our earlier talking point, not being particularly good. You know, you have to spend a lot of time, and as adults, you don't have a lot of time to figure it all out again. But still holds up, and it, you know, it's been one of the best games on the system. So I wouldn't say it's no way a hidden gem, but it was certainly one that I saw, and of course, too, as you know, as was the standard at the time, I was told that if you plugged the light gun into the player 2 slot, you could shoot Tyson with it. And that's what my neighbor told me, which was like a real popular falsehood that was passed around at the time, that you could shoot him and bloody him up, and that's how you beat him. Oh, yeah, that one is bantered around quite a bit. You know, everybody had an uncle that worked at Nintendo,
yeah,
and then Mike Tyson.
You could, in your youth, didn't they?
Oh, yeah, and everybody, you could shoot, you know. It all took was one kid to do it, and then everybody would try it. It would never work. So, yeah, Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, you know, they eventually the license for him, they lost it. So they did reprint the game a couple years later. I mean,
just
Mike Tyson's Punch-Out came out, like, just his Punch-Out. Mike Tyson's Punch-Out came out at the end of 87. And then I think it was like 3 years later, 3-4 years later that they released just Punch-Out. They replaced him at the end It's the same game otherwise, and that's the game that you find, like, on the virtual console if you want to go back and play it now on current things. And
so that's what happened, is the license ran out. I always just assumed it was his legal battles. And it just,
well, there's two pieces to it. One, the license that they paid to use his likeness had expired.
Mm, okay.
And the second part was that they were actually working on a sequel. And it's called Power Punch 2, even though there was never a Power Punch. And it did get released by a third party, but then they came to but that's when the his criminal issues and obviously, you know, he went to jail for a very serious crime came up, and so they were like, we can't use his name, so they changed the name and stuff. And then Nintendo didn't like the game. I actually just read an article about this earlier today too, because I remember that they were going to release almost like a sequel to it. And so Power Punch 2, even though there was never a Power Punch, is technically the sequel to Mike Tyson's Punch Out. And I don't think it is very good. I've actually never played it, and it came out way, way at the end of the system's life. But yeah, so Mike Tyson, one of the first, you know, I think as we go on and talk about other systems, we'll talk about licensed games, mm-hmm. right? And so this is a huge name that Nintendo paid a lot of money for to license. I mean, yeah. So that's a pretty cool game to have come out. It sold a lot of copies, that's for sure.
So, million-dollar question, did you ever beat Mike Tyson?
No. I am not particularly good at video games. I like them quite a bit. But
I do remember knocking him down once, and I want to say that I went the full three rounds but lost by decision, but I've never beaten Mike Tyson.
That's quite an accomplishment lasted.
I think that my hand-eye coordination and the reflexes, I think I've passed my peak. I don't think if I revisited that game that I could ever recapture that, because you'd have to relearn the patterns and everything as well. But yeah, no, I never beat him either. Man, that was a tough one.
You should task your youngest son to beat that. He's in his prime for hand-eye coordination. Let's live vicariously through him.
He plays video games all the time. He's our heir. He's our
he's the heir. You're the chosen one. Go beat Mike Tyson for us. 25 years
Who
later.
Who is Mike Tyson?
Exactly. 30 years later now, right? Yeah, 30 years later. Jeez. All right, so what do you have next?
My number three is one that is, I would think longtime Nintendo fans know this game, but maybe current video game fans who are younger probably have never heard of it. I went with one similar to the vein of like a Double Dragon style game, like a beat 'em up mm-hmm. side scroller. Mm-hmm. But the one I picked is River City Ransom.
Oh, good game.
Yeah, River City Ransom is a game that I actually didn't own for a long time. I had to play it at a friend's house. My friend Nathan Milks, who actually was messaging me just before I came on the air and said, "Wow, that sounds like a lot of fun. I wish you'd take calls on that show." So, Nate, if you're listening, maybe next time. But River City Ransom was a one or two player game. And, of course, you were in River City, which was run over by gangs of all kinds, the frats, the generics, the jocks, the squids. I don't remember the characters' names. I believe it was Alex and, I should have looked it up. But long story short, girlfriend gets kidnapped. You got to beat people up and win the girl back. It was a lot like Double Dragon. Graphics maybe not as good as Double Dragon, but it had some more fun to it because as you traveled through towns, you could find different weapons, which is something you didn't really do in Double Dragon. You could have chains and bats and things you could throw. And you could also go to towns and buy food and learn new moves, you know, buy books that would teach you new kicks and new jumping attacks and things like that. So it's kind of like a simple beat-em-up game that had some role-playing elements to it.
Sure, yeah.
And it's just it wasn't really, really difficult. If you played through it once, it's kind of like you remembered the style of it and you could beat these people again. It was kind of a lot of Nintendo games are like this, where the first half of the game is actually quite simple. And then the main bosses are just like making up for all the simplicity by being extra powerful. But I did manage to beat this game on multiple occasions with my friend and on my own. But River City Ransom was one that was a lot of fun to play with. On your own or with somebody. And I really liked the comedy aspects of it, too. You know, as a kid, I think 9 years old, one of the funniest things was if you go to the sauna, you'd see him toweling off and you'd see his butt, which, of course, got a lot of laughs from the fourth grade, you know,
sure.
Video game butt. But great, great game with some fun elements and some comedy to it. So that's my number three.
That's a great choice. And I, that actually was a game that I had. It was in that original lot that I had bought.
Okay.
And I played it a little bit. And then when I went to revisit it Well, I didn't have it anymore for some reason. I'm not sure. My cousin's done something with it. But it's actually pretty decently valued and certainly held in well regard. And they actually re-released it on the 3DS, kind of with a new, like that art style is popular in Japan. It was huge in Japan. So, and I don't know the name of it, but it's River City something. If you look up like for 3DS, they've came out with like other games in that same vein recently in the last couple years. And I've always looked at it and been like, do I want to add this to my cart? No, I would never play it. But it's tempting though.
I did purchase it for my virtual console when I had a Wii.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. I'm glad that they had that out there for people. Yeah, that's a nice choice. And I like that you talked about it's a beat 'em up and then it's also cooperative because that segues to my next one that I'm going to talk about, which is Contra.
Oh, yeah.
And so Contra was kind of the preeminent couch co-op experience and really one of the first of its kind where two players are playing on the same screen at the same time, run and gun versus beat 'em up. So, you know, obviously similar in certain ways as you're going left or right across the screen, but some different elements to it. But it's also a huge co-op game or one that you could try by yourself. And so Contra was one that I had, it's the first game I ever beat cooperatively. And of course we used the Konami code because again, we were in elementary school and I was not particularly good at games. It wasn't my game. But I could ace the first couple levels. You know, we had that stuff just memorized and going through with two players and 30 lives. We can make it through to the end, and that was a pretty big accomplishment for two kids in elementary school to not have to.
Was a great accomplishment,
you know. And trying to it's one of the hardest games ever. You know, if you're going with just like three lives, but when do have 30, you can see the whole game, which is thank you to Konami, who also made Castlevania, and so it was just cool. You know, you had the different guns, spread gun, the fireballs, and you were fighting aliens, and that kind of like aesthetic was a little foreign to me as a little kid. Like I just thought it was like, oh wait, we're just shooting other army guys, and then you're like, oh no, they're like skeleton aliens we're shooting, and then it gets weirder as it goes along. But it's a cool story. And the bosses are really awesome. It's super impressive. And again, like the two-player co-op of it was just unparalleled. So you talk about like, you know, spending a lot of time playing that together and getting to work and see the whole game was huge. So it's something that still sticks out to me today.
And one thing I love about Contra was the box art, which clearly had like the Arnold character and the Sylvester Stallone character, you know, with the alien right in the middle of them.
Yeah, they were hitting all the high spots for the 80s.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad you mentioned the Konami code kind of being necessary to beat the game, because Contra's a game that a lot of people are like, oh yeah, I beat Contra. I'm like, we all beat it with 30 lives. But like you said, trying to do that with three lives, I've tried before, and it is basically impossible to do.
It is hard. You can, you can go on YouTube. I've seen guys go through runs like that, racing through it without, with either using just the original three, because I think they may have died like once or twice. I've seen it before at a gaming convention. Wow. The dude was actually playing it behind like a band that was playing like music from it. And so that was my other segue, is that the music in this game is amazing. And I actually fired it up before we talked today because I wanted to listen to the, dun 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 dun. It was great. And it had you jazzed in, and you don't get sick of it. And we would play it for hours and hours. So
what was cool about Contra 2 was you had the side scrolling, like you said, but then there would be those levels where you'd go into base and it was like top to bottom. You know, like it would change kind of the format of how you're playing, which was pretty rare back then. You know, instead of going side scroller, when you're in those bases, it's like you got to move upwards rather than left to right, which is a cool little twist. So
yeah, they added quite a bit to it. Yeah, it's a pretty deep game. So
one beef I had with Contra that. If you managed to be playing it with a friend and that friend stunk, you shared 30 lives.
That's right. So, yeah, because they would die, and then they would steal three lives from you to come back, and then they would steal three lives from you again. Yeah. And so, you both started with 30. And I admittedly, I'm sure maybe it took me like 39. I don't even know if I counted in the day. I should have. But, it was... Because it's not particularly, like we said, it's a challenging game. There's bullets all over the place. Every little thing, just bounces you off and you're dead. So
it doesn't seem like, I'm sure it is, but back then all those games had patterns. If you could learn the patterns, you could do it. And it just didn't seem very static with the pattern, like most games were. Like there was some randomness to it.
Well, it's certainly tough with two players, too, because that person's kind of, because the screen only goes as far as, you know, like if you can go to the right, but if your buddy doesn't move, the screen stops. So you're exposed, and then so you have to make different jumping patterns, and then the bullets are maybe the same, but you haven't done this exactly the same before. So oh,
yeah. That's when you know you need to evaluate friendships.
That's right. Did you ever play the Super C?
I did. Didn't like it as much, but I got that one late.
Okay.
And so that's a big reason why. I just never dove into it like I did with regular old Contra.
Yeah, I've always been intrigued by the other Contra games, but this was really like the peak of Contra for me. Like, I played Contra 3. I actually have it. And it's a great game. But I don't know, like, it never recaptured Contra on the NES for me.
No.
I don't know, maybe it just wasn't for me then. And even, like the PS2 had a couple different games with Contra in it and stuff, and it just never...
Yeah. I mean, I want to say the SNES, the handheld system, the SNES Classic has a Contra port on there.
Yeah, it has Contra 3 on it, which is one of the best games for the system for sure. Yeah, it's on there.
So, but yeah, Contra's a great one, and I like that we've kind of hit... games that, you know, maybe people who are just checking us out for the first time, if you're dabbling in Nintendo, I'm sure you know Contra and Punch-Out and Castlevania. Maybe not River City Ransom, but, you know, we're hitting the game. We're hitting some names you know.
But I also think we're hitting some general themes, right? So, like, back then was, like, couch co-op, which is nearly extinct nowadays with gaming, because you're playing online or whatnot. You know, that kind of feeling is gone. You talked about renting games for a weekend, and I'll talk about that in a couple minutes here. But even with, like, Tyson was kind of like the puzzler, like, just kind of like spectating, which is something you can relate to today.
Yeah.
So what do you have for your number two there?
So number two, I'm venturing for the first time into the world of sports video games.
Okay, mine is going to be sports, too. Here we go.
Okay, let's see. Well, mine is a baseball game. Are we baseball?
Nope.
Okay.
Not this time.
I think I know what yours is.
Okay.
I went with a game called Baseball Stars. Baseball Stars is, in terms of just gameplay and playing baseball, it's not really any different than RBI Baseball or Bases Loaded. There's a ton of baseball games for Nintendo. Where Baseball Stars stuck out for me, and as I was kind of reading on this a little bit just to refresh my memory, I actually found out this was the first game that did this. Not just the first game I saw, but the first game that did this. It was the first NES sports game to have battery backup, which let you create teams, create players for the very first time ever, which as a kid was amazing. I could not tell you how many times I made my own little league team. You know, and of course, you had the option of who was the good players and who was the bad players. So, you know, your best friends could all hit home runs and throw 100 mile an hour fastballs, whereas, you know, the kid you didn't like rode the pine, you know, even if he was the actual team.
And you had a certain amount of points you could allocate, right? Wasn't that how it worked?
Yeah, and there was a little trick to it to where if you looked at, like, there was potential, and potential was like the max they could get if you invested everything into them. And only a few characters had max potential, meaning you could max out their stats. And if you could find one of those guys, you'd grab him in a heartbeat and put everything into him because they'd be maxed out in every statistic. But you could create team names. You could create player names, put them in whatever position you want. It was just such a mind-blowing experience at that point. Like, I can put myself in a video game because as a kid, that's kind of what you do. We mentioned Castlevania and you said, you know, the imagination. Of course, I pretend to be Simon Belmont too. Sometimes when I was playing the game, you know, or I'd finish playing and my mom would make me turn off the game. I'd go outside and I'd be Simon Belmont in the yard. Whereas with baseball stuff, on the screen batting right now is Jordan Duncan, and he's going to hit a home run. And this is a game that was a lot of fun with friends. And even if you weren't really into that stuff, the teams that they had in the game were kind of cool. They had like a team full of girls. They had the lovely ladies was their name. They had a monster team. They had an American Dream team, which is like Babe Ruth, Hank Aaron, Pete Rose. They didn't use their names, although I think they were just like Babe, Hank, Pete, you know?
Yeah, pretty much. Yep, you're right.
So it was a really cool thing, and you could play the role of general manager. You had money to spend, and it's just a great, great game for at the time. Just had a ton of fun with it. This is a game that I think I remember playing with friends a lot. maybe more than any other game in terms of Baseball Stars. Because, you know, if you had that friend who'd never played Nintendo before, like we said, and they're playing Contra, they're stealing your lives, you're getting mad. But baseball games are easy to pick up because sure. the D-pad is the shape of a baseball diamond. You want to go to first, press where first base would be, you know? So,
yeah.
great game that was just way ahead of its time.
Absolutely. You know, you talked about RPG elements in the in River City Ransom, and then Baseball Stars comes along, and I didn't have experience of that when I was younger, mm-hmm. but reading up on it, and I have it now, and I've played it a little bit, that's just, to your point, just imagine, you know, we were both really into sports. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine what that game would have done for me from a baseball standpoint. It just, like you said, and the feeling to be like, that's me, that's my name on the screen in an 8-bit game, is that's a really powerful memory, for sure.
And so the other thing, too, is after you make that team, you put them in the league with the other teams that are already in the game, and you'd have leagues. You know, you'd have seasons, and it'd keep track of stats and everything. It was just nuts. I mean, RBI Baseball was probably the first baseball game I played for Nintendo, but this one just blew it out of the water for me.
Yeah. Yeah, SNK, who made that, you know, they made the Neo Geo too, but then they also made games for the Nintendo. Mm-hmm. And they, you can find, you know, different arcade versions of Baseball Stars, which had some of the similar teams, but, you know, they were arcade games. And so they were meant to be like quarter pushers and you could work through, but none of them had the saving or the RPG elements that this one did.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's a great pick. My number two is also sports, like we talked about.
Is it football?
It is football, and it is Tecmo Super Bowl.
Yes.
And so we talked about kind of – so I was a kid that would pour through the box scores in the paper, right? Mm-hmm. I would go out back and we'd play baseball in the neighborhood, or I'd play it with myself even, and I'd have my own, like, written rosters. And I knew all the major league players in 1987 and 1988, you know, and for many decades after that. And so we would – and so just like seeing those rosters was huge, right? So like I liked RBI Baseball, and that's a game that I remember playing in the middle of the night or renting for a weekend. Mm-hmm. But you know, football was football, and I had seen Tecmo Bowl, but of course it had a limited amount of teams. It didn't have all the teams in it, and I didn't get a chance to really play too much of that. And then Tecmo Super Bowl came around, and that had all the teams in it. And had all the players, except for, you know, my quarterback, Randall Cunningham, who was QB12 in there. And it had benches, too. So Tecmo made robust sports games. And I'll talk a little bit more about some other ones after we're done our four. But, you know, Tecmo Super Bowl had, you could go to the bench and add players in. It had an expanded playbook. It had full seasons. And this was brand new. Because, again, the original Tecmo Bowl was kind of like an arcade thing where you just picked a team and you worked your way through. You got a password.
Yep.
But Tecmo Super Bowl could save. And what made this game really ideal, too, is you know it has lasting power is because it's still played today.
Yeah.
They figured out how to fix all the gameplay issues in it. They expanded and added more teams to be, you know, you can download. I know the guys that do it, and you can download, you know, Tecmo Super Bowl 2017 and have all the NFL rosters and players with all the new helmets and everything. And like I said, they cleaned up all the gameplay. They expanded the playbooks. And it still goes on, you know, to this day. So that shows you how lasting. And of course, they have, you know, you've probably seen some documentaries, or maybe you heard of them, you know, of Tecmo Super Bowl tournaments that go on. There's a big one in Madison, Wisconsin. And they actually did a documentary for the NFL Network that showed, like, the lasting appeal of that game. And Christian Okoye even, like, was interviewed for it because he was a monster in the game. And everybody remembers Bo, too, you know, and he was great. But that game, to me, was, like, seeing all these players with their real names, being able to play a season mode was just unbelievable. So we would rent that one for a weekend if it was in, and it was hard. But if it was in, like, we were all over it, and we would just play the shit out of that. it was hard, too, man, because they only had maybe, like, one or two copies. So you'd go and pull that box down, and then if that, you know, cardboard card wasn't in the back of it, you knew you were out of luck. So that was a great feeling, right, nostalgia-wise.
Yeah,
like,
I just got a wave coming back over me as you're really describing the video store experience.
Because they had all the boxes. You could look at all these great boxes and That's what sold you on the game, because back then, you know, there were, other than Nintendo Power, you didn't know. You just looked at it and you're like, wow, this looks cool. And you could get home and be like, this game sucked. Oh, yeah. You know, and you, but at least you just rented it.
Yeah, there are a lot of games that I rented and even regretted my $3, you know.
Sure.
Yeah, Tecmo Super.
Live and learn.
Oh, gosh, what a game. And this is one that just missed my list, probably in my top, I wouldn't say it was fifth, but it's probably in my top 10. For every reason you listed. I mean, so many of these games. What's cool about these games that we talked about with Atari, where Atari's different, is these games, people still play. You know,
yeah,
still fun
we played them
play.
In college 10 years later. Like, my buddy would sit, like, and you emulate it on his computer and be like, I just beat the, I just won 80 nothing, you know, because, I mean, the original game was stupidly easy.
Oh, yeah, it was.
So.
But, I mean, it was, they're games that still hold up today. My number one, when we get to it, is a game that I would play right now if I had it, but yeah, Tecmo Super Bowl, I think the other thing is both our number twos are different, but for the same reasons, kind of just
sure.
It blew our minds. You know, it's stuff that beforehand, we'd never seen, and really just peeked into what we wanted as gamers, especially as kids. You know, those stats that you were obsessed with, and the thought of putting yourself on the field. I mean, both games hit home runs in their own respect in terms of giving, especially kids, mm-hmm. exactly what they wanted in a sports video game.
Yeah, and there was nothing out there at the time. It was the first of its kind, mm-hmm. and that's really why it comes into being a defining experience.
Mm-hmm. And you know, if you're listening and you don't know Tecmo Super Bowl, you've never played it. It's like Brad said, it's more than just Bo Jackson. You know, that's of course the lasting legacy is Bo Jackson's dominance in Tecmo Bowl and Tecmo Super Bowl. But it's just a great game. Every game. What year was the rosters? What year?
Oh, you're going to challenge me off the bat on this. It
had to be like 90 to 92, one of those years. So it's basically the NFL roster from one of those years. So, you know, like the Lions have Barry Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Bills were probably very good. So I would guess, what, Thurman Thomas would probably be on Buffalo.
Thurman withheld his name, too, if I remember correctly.
Yeah,
he just was 34.
RB 34. So Googling looks like... Looks like the 1991 is when it was released, so I'm guessing 91 or 1990 roster.
Yeah, that sounds about right. The Eagles, I remember the Eagles year. It was the year they were really good, and that Randall Cunningham broke his leg the first game of the season. It was those rosters.
Okay.
So that team was supposed to be fantastic. I remember the original game's rosters were like 88, 89, mm-hmm. Because I remember there were some different versions of the game out that kind of changed because we were all big 49ers fans. But I want to say it was 1990 for a Tecmo Super Bowl.
So the last thing on Tecmo Super Bowl is, you know, everyone kind of knows, of course, Bo Jackson, right, was so good. But was it Bruce Smith that was just insane if you were playing defense, where you could just get through and sack every single time? I think it was – was it Bruce Smith?
Well, Bruce – yeah, because in the original it was Lawrence Taylor. Mm-hmm. And then in this version, I think it was Bruce Smith.
But you could just crush the quarterback with Bruce Smith if you're on defense, like with the greatest of ease, you know. So, but cool, yeah, great game. Glad we got to talk.
Yeah, it may have been. I know it was the 1991 schedule. So let's say that it was the 91 rosters because it came out at the very end of the year.
Okay.
It came out in December, which is weird. Like, if you ever go back and look at it, like, sports release schedules, now we, like, know them by clockwork when they're going to come out. But back in the day, it was really weird. Like, they would release at really, like, bad business times
out. I'm on their Wikipedia. It's interesting. This game came out just under the wire for Christmas 1991. So probably a lot of kids had that under their tree. I did not. Didn't get it that soon, but I'm sure I wound up with it eventually. So, Funko Land was where most of our purchases took place.
Yeah.
So, all right, we've hit our number one. Do we want to reveal our number ones? Do we want to do some of our honorable mentions now, or do we want to save that for the very end?
Well, why don't we do your call? Go ahead and talk about maybe some other ones that almost made your cut, and then we'll talk about our number ones.
Before we went on the air, I read to Brad a list that I made of games that I considered, and I have like 20 games that I considered, and that's, I think, just scratching the surface. So many good games for the Nintendo. It's a system. I mean, and of course, I'm sure a lot of it's nostalgia. I'm sure a lot of it is that's my peak childhood memories go to Nintendo more than any other system. Maybe Super Nintendo rivals it, but I think Nintendo. So some of these games, I'm sure if it played back, wouldn't really hold up like they did, but there's so many that just have personal memories and stuff like that. Let me give you a couple. Mike Tyson's okay. Punch-Out was on my short list. Tecmo Super Bowl was on my short list. So obviously I don't need to talk much about them. Tetris was one I thought about.
Sure.
Just for the simplicity and the ease. That was maybe the only game I ever remember my mom playing regularly, video games. She actually liked Tetris. And I think Tetris maybe was even more famous through Game Boy.
Yeah.
But Contra, again, was on my short list as well. Pro Wrestling, since this is a Place to Be Nation pop feed. Of course, Place to Be Nation and wrestling go hand in hand. Pro Wrestling was one that I considered. Starman and King Korn Karn and the Amazon. Great, great game. I don't want to give away all my honorable mentions because I think you could deduce what my number one is. So,
well, let's go to our number ones then.
Okay, cool.
And then we'll jump back in. So why don't you go first with sure. With your
so top my number one was a very easy choice. It was basically me coming up with a list of three because I knew this was my number one. It wasn't going to budge. It was the first game we ever had. Now, if you remember last week when we talked on Atari. A lot of people, when they bought the Nintendo, got the Mario Brothers or the Mario Duck Hunt combo. We actually didn't. My brother got this big game book with like 90 games. So we had to buy a game. And the very first game he ever bought was the very first game I ever saw for the Nintendo, very first game I ever played. I don't think that's why it's my number one. I think it's because it's a genuinely great game. And without giving the name, I will give away what it is. One thing that was unique about it was amongst the gray and sometimes black cartridges for the Nintendo Entertainment System, one stood out as gold. A nice gold cartridge meant that you had The Legend of Zelda. And when I first saw The Legend of Zelda, all I'd seen before that was Atari. And I saw Link hitting Octoroks and getting swords, and I was stunned. The Legend of Zelda is kind of like my go-to. I don't know that I'd say it's my favorite game of all time, but I think it might be my most memorable game of all time. It's a game that I remember learning how to play the Nintendo on. It's a game I remember feeling a great, great sense of accomplishment when I defeated it, and even more so when I defeated the second quest, which was a really cool thing back then. Wow, there's another way to beat the game. For anyone who, I don't know why you'd be listening to a Nintendo podcast if you don't know what Zelda is, but if you are, The Legend of Zelda was exactly what it, you know, it's an adventure game. You know, you play the character Link, and you have to rescue the Princess Zelda from the clutches of Ganon, but now kind of known as Ganondorf. I don't know when the dwarf got added, but but it was not a side scroller. It was kind of a screen. You know, you go from one screen to the next. It had dungeons. It had puzzles. It had special weapons. It had incredible enemies like Dodongo the Triceratops. It had that floating eyeball whose name I can't remember. It had Ganon, of course. It had Gliok the dragon. Just, I don't even know, like, how much to say, because I could go on and on and on and really fanboy about Zelda. But this was a no-brainer for me. Zelda is my number one, and it's probably never, ever going to change.
And while people may know Zelda, you know, maybe Breath of the Wild you've played, you know, this was certainly an 8-bit experience. And I don't know, do you still have the map? Do you remember the map that came with it?
You know, I don't think we do. Mm-mm.
I mean,
I remember it, but I don't have a copy anymore.
Yeah. Oh, right. That's what I meant. You remember the map? I remember sprawling that out because one of my next door neighbors had that game, and I remember kind of playing it through with him and beating it. Also, watching him kind of race through it. And so you beat the Master Quest too. Then you went through the second time.
Yeah, that one took a long time. I remember especially Ganondorf's level 9 dungeon was really hard to figure out because you had to kind of go through some ladders and go through some secret tunnels just the right way to even find him. You know, once you found him, he was... What's interesting about Zelda, we talked about Punch-Out and all these other games. Zelda was almost the opposite, where it was a difficult game, but if you got the Ganon, you're going to win. Ganon was really not that much of a problem. So,
and that was good, considering all the work you had to do to get to him.
Exactly.
You know, if you would die and have to go backwards. And that's a great pick. And that's a... yeah, it was so different for its time, and I can only imagine. I I had a gold version of that one myself, and its sequel, which, you know, Adventures of Link didn't live up to anything for me either. I wasn't a really big fan of it, but
not even on my honorable mentions list.
No, but that's a fantastic number one.
They did write the ship with the Super Nintendo. We'll talk about that when we get to that
system. Oh, yeah, we will talk to that one when we get to that system. Yeah, well, that's a great number one. Yeah. So my number one is one that we haven't talked about this series yet, which is odd because it's almost like associated with Nintendo. And so my number one, it's kind of a little bit of the baby face here, which would be Super Mario Brothers 3. Yeah. Because it's the first game I ever beat myself.
Before you go into it, hang on.
Yeah.
That's the game I saw it on my honorable mentions, and I didn't want to read that one out loud because I'm like, if I mention Mario 3, people are going to probably know I went Zelda. So it was
on
my short.
That's right. That's right. We were trying to hide our picks before we got too much into it. You're right, right? Because everybody's kind of been waiting for when is Mario 3 going to come out? Yeah. And so, you know, I just remember being incredibly excited for this game. And again, like my best friend at the time had got it. And, we had the Nintendo Power Strategy Guide too. Mm-hmm. And it was, I think we may have beat it like the first night that we had it, you know, because, you know, there were warp whistles. So we knew where the warp whistles were.
Oh, so you could get to level 8, maybe?
Yeah, you could, you know, you beat World 1. And then you could use the whistles, and you could get to 8. Yeah. And then, I mean, maybe it wasn't the first day, but we kind of had an idea, like, how to work our way through 8. And we would use, like, the P-Wings that you would get at the end of beating the first world to, like, get through the airships, because they were really hard. Yeah, and then I remember beating, and I remember, you know, facing, you know, Bowser at the end and getting him to, you know, break through the bricks. And it was quite a feeling, you know, to be like, well, I did that all by myself. So, you know, it's an incredible platformer, quite the testament to 8-bits, pretty much maxing out the system on what you could do, for sure. No saving, though, still. We talked about lasting appeal and people to still play it. Like, I remember us playing it 10 years later in college, a rainy Saturday afternoon. Like, we had, like, the Nintendo up. But meanwhile, we're playing, like, Dreamcast in the other room. But, like, my roommate's got, like, the Nintendo, and we're hoping that it doesn't, like, budge a little bit so the game, you know, just goes off because it was so finicky back then with those old dirty Nintendos and taking care of your stuff and blowing in cartridges. Yeah, we had the cleaning kits. That may have been a little bit of a work. I mean, they worked. I mean, really, all you need is a Q-tip and some ammonia.
Right.
I mean, I have my your isopropyl alcohol there. That's all you need to do it with a Q-tip. And actually, I've done crazy things to clean games. I've taken them apart. I have, like, the little bit that you can unscrew Nintendo games with, and I've used, like, the eraser on the pins to clean them up. And then you get to the point where it's like, is this game really worth it? Or do I need to get another copy for $6, you know? So, so Mario 3 was, I mean, it was everything in our imagination kind of moving through the Marios. You know, I Mario 1 was a game I played a lot of, and we played a lot of at the orthodontist of all places. What a cool orthodontist to have a Nintendo set up in the waiting room, right? And so, you know, I knew all the tricks that could warp through to that game too, and where all that stuff was. And then Mario 2 was a game I played a lot of too, but never really liked. But I remember, like,
very different from the other two.
Yeah, it was different, you know, as the story is well laid out. And so it was, I remember the Nintendo Power though, and being, like, so into, like, the different maps of it and these things. But even when I came back to Nintendo, you know, years ago, I really couldn't really get too much into that one. It really is quite different. But it's a good game. And then so 3 was just kind of the culmination of the 8-bit era for me. And really almost the culmination of, like, platformers for me for a while. Because I was so into sports games. That's where really a lot of my 16-bit gaming was, until we got into the PlayStation. And so Mario 3 was my pinnacle, easily my number one there, all-timer for the system and for me personally.
Okay, yeah. I mean, it's, I think Mario 3, Zelda, for me, honestly, maybe Mike Tyson's Punch-Out might be, like, the three games that I associate with the Nintendo the most. And I don't think you can go wrong with any of the three. And what's cool about all three of those games is they're very different, but all very playable. Quick question about it.
Yeah.
Did you see The Wizard? The movie The Wizard?
You know what? At the time, I did not get hyped from it from seeing that. I saw it after that, but it was not. I mean, that's a crazy promotional thing to have that reveal.
They made a movie where it was a commercial for Mario 3 and the Power Glove.
Right, you know? Right.
Which I guess shows the reach of Nintendo at that time. So,
absolutely.
I remember seeing The Wizard in theaters. I think it was probably at the Dollar Theater, which is another thing that kids today won't understand. You could go see movies for a dollar right before they go to the theaters. But yeah. Mario 3, what's tough about these being our number ones, what can we really say, like, that's unique to say about these games?
Yeah, so it's really just our childhood experiences. You know, again, kind of, I remember, like, going to a friend's house on a Friday and, like, talking about it all day and having the strategy guide and just, like, sitting down, like, you know, you'll never recapture that feeling of you literally had nothing else in the world to worry about, you know? Nowadays, we can sit down and maybe get lost for a little bit.
Yep.
But back then, you could get lost for, you know, a weekend at a time until your parents picked you up. And that was just it. And I just remember that, like, it was the best. And that's why, you know, we talk about nostalgia and how everything was the greatest when you were 12 and 13 years old. And that's why, you know. And so that's a big part of why. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I remember a lot of that tied to it. And I remember, you know, playing it and having the game myself. And like I said, I remember roommates still playing it, you know, 10 years later in college. And, you know, now then we didn't warp whistle. We would say, like, well, we're just going to go through it, you know, every level. Mm-hmm. It wasn't particularly challenging, but it certainly added to it. And look, you played plenty of Mario since then. And that's actually one series that I probably have, I think, every one of. And we've played, too, even my wife and I, through the Wii U versions up to, up to now, the Switch one. Yeah, Mario All-Stars was interesting right on the, and that's really the first compilation game ever released on, and it was on the Super Nintendo where it had 1, 2, and 3, which is really smart at the time because there was a lot of blowback of people didn't parents didn't understand what a new system was and why it didn't play their old games. Right. And then they released one where you could get all these old games, but actually, you know, being very crotchety, I actually don't like how those games are emulated on there and how they map them over. They don't feel the same.
I think that's where Mario 2 really hurts, is on those versions. You know, Mario 2, where you had to choose from Mario, Luigi, Toad, Princess.
Yeah.
Luigi's really tough to deal with on those.
I feel like you slide like crazy in those games, even the first one. Like, it just doesn't have the control that you're, like, the pixel-perfect control you're used to.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Now, it has a cool thing, too, because it has the original Super Mario Bros. 2 in Japan, which they call the Lost Levels in that game, which essentially is Super Mario Bros. 1, the sequel, where it looks exactly the same, only it's 20 times harder. And that game is on that compilation. And you can get that on, like, you know, the Virtual Console for any Nintendo system. They've put them out. It's on the Wii U All-Stars, or the Wii Mario All-Stars that came out, which is essentially just the Super Mario All-Stars on a disc. It's actually really disappointing, because I still don't like how those play. But if you wanted to play the Lost Levels, you could play it on there. And it's very, very hard, so that's your thing. Yeah, it was too challenging for the U.S.
I'm definitely not an anti-Mario guy, but I am very much a pro-Link guy, and I think a lot of Nintendo people, you kind of fall in one camp or the other. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I don't remember. You know, I had, my friends didn't have, we didn't play Zelda. And then my neighbor had it across, and like, so I knew about it, but I didn't. And then so when I played it, it essentially was like, hey, want to watch and like co-play, like, and we'll just beat it. So it was like, oh, cool. Mm-hmm. You know, it definitely caught my imagination more into, you know, when I got more into like role-playing games and stuff. And I went back and played it a bit, for sure.
Gotcha. Okay. Cool. So that's our top four. And are we using the hashtag PTB top four, correct? So if you're listening,
well, share it with
Game
that.
Game Struck four, you know.
Game Struck four or PTB top and four. Top four. Right. Sure, that works.
Whatever episode you're listening to, we'd love to see what our listeners played and what they're playing. Maybe, I don't know, maybe they're experiencing these systems for the first time.
Could be.
Pretty cool to hear from.
Now, have you? Let me do a couple of my honorable mentions because I don't want to leave anybody out here. Okay. So RC Pro-Am almost made my list. You ever play that game?
Oh yeah,
fantastic game. Still have my original version of that, and I had played it a ton. That's a challenging game. One that I wanted to go back because again that whole thing like, well now I'm an adult, like let's see if I can beat this. No, so it was challenging, you know, and the sequel stunk, but RC Pro-Am.
Sequels.
I'm looking at my shelf here to see. So Hoops was another one. So like Double Dribble was out there, but it wasn't great. Hoops is pretty cool though, right? So it was 2-on-2 and you got to pick. And you had like every ethnicity and every height, and everybody had like a different skill set. And so you would play like street ball, and it wasn't bad, to be honest. I played a ton of that at my neighbor's house.
I'm just thinking, every ethnicity and every height, like who takes the short Asian guy?
He was in there, though, I'm pretty sure.
he's probably fast, right?
and gender, too. I should say that. So you can mix and match. Like, you could have the, I think you can mix it. Or was it if you picked the girls, you can only, I got to remember now. Someone will correct me on it. But
the original mixed match challenge, huh?
Exactly, right? It was pretty progressive. Guys could play with girls on the same street. I'm sure you can mix genders. But, yeah, so there was hoops. And, you know, I talked about with Tecmo games. So mm-hmm. I didn't play Tecmo baseball because I was an RBI guy.
Yeah, same here.
Like, I remember playing RBI baseball, you know, in the middle of the night, you know, like waiting to like, didn't want to go to bed, and my parents would pick me up for church the next morning at a sleepover, and I'd just be like, I'm just gonna, you know, the real names in that game were amazing. And then when the second and third versions came out that had all the teams, the Phillies, who were terrible, were in the game finally. So this was amazing to me because it was like, these are the players that I watch and read about all the time. These are my guys. They're terrible, but they're my guys. So, but also Tecmo NBA basketball was the equivalent to Tecmo Super Bowl, although not as good. The gameplay actually, it's a little wild. The AI can be a little bit tough. I wouldn't say it's like the greatest engine ever, but it was so robust with stats and teams and all the players, and there was just nothing for that with the NBA. So I was really into basketball. Yeah, I was really into basketball, like, you know, early 90s, because it was like 11, 12 now, so I'm getting more exposure to it and really into it. And so this game just blew my mind, and it was, it actually has a really cool roster in it, because it's before Jordan and Barkley pulled themselves out of games. Mm-hmm. So this version on the Nintendo is like the best one because it has everybody in it. You could play as Michael Jordan in a video game, and that was just wild. I mean, you could do it on the Genesis with, you know, Bulls versus Blazers and stuff, but this was on my Nintendo. I didn't have that, you know, access to that. So
Sixers Barkley too, right?
Yep, Sixers Barkley. Yep, it was in there, and Magic Johnson was in there still. He hadn't retired yet. So it was a really, like, stacked. And actually, if you get to, like, the Genesis version of the same game, like, Jordan's not in that one. Mm. But the Super Nintendo version, I think he is. But it's certainly a really good roster. I remember being, like, this is, like, the peak NBA roster if you're a big fan of, like, that time
NBA,
with all the Supers.
That sounds insane. Or 1990. Oof.
Yeah. Yep. Let's see. What else here? So the original arcade Mario Brothers is one that I'm a big fan of, too.
Wow,
you've probably seen them with the two-player kind of cooperating and also, you know, hurting each other.
Screw each other over,
screw each other. I played a lot of that on our home computers, too. And then I really liked that. You know, Nintendo early on in their releases was a lot of arcade releases, like Popeye and Donkey Kong and stuff that were just
games
like
that you could have got on Atari, actually.
Yeah, not as good, but yeah, Mario Brothers was on Atari. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, the original arcade game was on Atari. It was really good on Nintendo, and I played Popeye on the Commodore 64 a lot, and I got it for
Atari
Nintendo.
And Nintendo.
Yeah, Popeye was awesome, man. I was actually, if we had to go through, like, it wouldn't make my list for Nintendo because I played it more on home computers, but I remember, like, pretty much figuring that game out because we just didn't have a lot of games and playing the heck out of Popeye there. And so those were some big ones there for my honorable mentions. I don't think there's any other sports ones I'm thinking of here.
I have a sport.
I think that's it. Oh, Turtles was the other one. Go ahead. You do your sports, and then we'll get to Turtles.
Yeah. So my sports game that almost made the list is not really a sport that you would think, but Super Dodgeball. Do you remember that game?
Oh, I have that one. That's a great game. And, you know, that's made by the same people that made River City Ransom.
Yep.
It's the same character sprites.
Yep. Yeah. It's just a great game where I think it was different countries, correct? So you'd be Team USA against. And, you know, each different player had their own, like, mega throw and power throw. Just a really fun two-player game. It's okay to play the computer. It's a little easy to play one player, but playing with your friends is a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was a great game. So a couple of my other ones.
A lot of fun, but also very, very aggravating. You mentioned the Ninja Turtles.
I did. Yeah, the Ninja Turtles was, so again, we go back to like, you know, 10, 11-year-olds' imaginations, and the Turtles were super popular, and now they have these games on Nintendo, because we played it in the arcade. I don't even know if the original arcade game came out yet. That's for another show, but the home Turtles game was like, you thought it was unlimited possibilities, and it looked so cool, and you could switch between the Turtles. It was a pretty challenging game, and you know, broke in some places. They made it pretty hard.
Pretty hard.
I could never get – yeah, it was terrifyingly hard. I actually know a guy, and I've seen there's – you can beat that game in, like, I don't know, what, 30 minutes or something, I think. You make it all the way through real fast. It's crazy, but you got to be, like, a speed runner, one of those all-time guys and when it comes to playing games and having stuff memorized.
Yeah, not even close for me. Never came close.
No, one or two. The second game was the arcade game, so it was the home version of the popular arcade game that we all remember.
Turtles in Time, right?
That was for the 16-bit systems.
Oh, okay. Turtles in Time was a really good one. Yeah.
Yeah. And I had, and then I also had Spy Hunter.
Oh, that's another good one.
I was a big fan of Spy Hunter.
Spy Hunter.
Yeah, that's why it's an honorable mention. I'm like, it almost made my list. Well, yes, that's what honorable mentions are. So Spy Hunter almost made my list. I just love the idea of it. I played a lot of it too, obviously, but like even as an adult, I kind of grew more into liking arcade games because they were shorter and more like skill based, and so like I would still play Spy Hunter. Like I really liked that first game of that, and then Ice Hockey was the other sports one I wanted to talk about that I had a lot of experience with. I didn't play Blades of Steel, which as like a retro sports gamer was like a little bit of like a crime against humanity. It was like, you know, I never played that. I did as an adult, but Ice Hockey though we played. You know, you had the big dude and you could switch to different countries and the different players out there, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, you could be the fat kid or the skinny guy.
Yep.
You know, yeah, Ice Hockey was another really good game. Man, you're bringing up some. That's where Nintendo's library is so vast. Like, I'm sure there's games that I just don't remember. That, you know, if somebody who's listening posts it, I'm going to be like, oh, man, I forgot about how good that game was.
You know? And unlike the Atari, we probably played it.
Yeah,
so, like,
exactly.
The Atari one is like, do you know this game? I've never heard of it, you know. Right. But with Nintendo, we've at least heard of it. There's just so many out there that I could rattle off, too, for sure.
You know, in terms of games that are more well-known, DuckTales came close to making
it. I was just going to say, that's funny. Yeah, that's a great platform. An all-timer on that system. Mm-hmm. That's a great game.
DuckTales, Ninja Gaiden, kind of flirted with putting that there instead of Castlevania. Very similar.
Speaking of challenging.
Yeah, exactly. Very similar in the sense of very fun games, but man, were they hard. That's another. I don't think I ever beat the original Ninja Gaiden. The second one, I think I did, but part one, I don't know that I ever did. And then I kind of went with some obscure games, you know, games that I remember renting or buying used that I know weren't popular. I thought about maybe I'll sort of slot them in there. But since we're only doing four, it's kind of hard to find, you know, time for them. But like Shadowgate and Deja Vu kind of go hand in hand in terms of like puzzle games, almost like computer games that were put on Nintendo. I don't know if they were original computer games, but, you know, it was kind of like, you're standing in a door. What do you do? You know,
there's different. Always stuck out to me, yeah. Like in how, because we had computers, right? So the Apple II or whatever, and they were so much better on the Apple II. Like you'd see, like, how can I play Pool of Radiance, the Dungeons and Dragons game on the Nintendo? Like, this just makes no sense to me. And then you play, you're like, this game sucks on the Nintendo,
right?
But on with a keyboard and stuff, it was good.
Yep. But one game that was kind of along those lines that I almost ranked because it's kind of forever my game that I list that no one ever remembers was a game called Nightshade, where it wasn't really point and click, because that was tough about Nintendo with Shadowgate stuff is you can't really click with a D-pad. But Nightshade was a game of like an inept superhero who was just trying to become famous. And it was kind of more comedy-based, you know, like you would save people, but nobody would care who you are. They'd always get your name wrong and stuff. So just a really cool game that is a personal favorite of mine, but it's not as good as the games that I listed. But I just wanted to mention Nightshade was great. So if you're looking for a game to emulate or look for, Nightshade is one worth looking at. Some well-known games. I had Mega Man 2 listed as a maybe. Double Dragon, you know.
Double Dragon was weird on the NES. Wasn't that the one that didn't have co-op? Like, you could only play one player. Like, you could alternate lives, like you died, but it wasn't the same screen.
Yeah, you couldn't play at the same time. Yeah.
Right. Double Dragon 2 was really good, but Double Dragon 1 is, like, one of the biggest whiffs on the system where you couldn't play cooperatively, which made no sense.
And Double Dragon 2, you could really screw your friends, because kind of like Contra, where, like, you shared lives. With Double Dragon 2, you could hit your teammate and kill them.
Yeah, and take their life.
So if you're down to your last one, you can just throw a kick at your friend's head and be like, got an extra life.
Yeah, we used to do that to my younger brother and stuff too. The game would start and we just beat the shit out of him. And it was kind of like almost like a Street Fighter brawler when you just fought each other and laughed. And that was the most important part.
Right. Well, we laughed. They wouldn't.
No, they cried. We wanted to make them cry.
Right, exactly.
So some of the other ones that I think that are still good that I want to talk about some of the remakes and how you play them today. You talked about the Virtual Console, and there was a great game that came out on the Xbox One, the PS4, the Disney Afternoon series that came out. And so it was made by the same people that put together the Mega Man Legacy Collections, which were these were not rebuilt. These were like the core game that they just mapped to a new system. It was not emulation. It was rebuilding it exactly as it was. And they rebuilt all the Disney Afternoon games that were so popular on the NES. DuckTales.
Like Chippendale Rescue Rangers.
Chippendale Rescue Rangers on there, 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
DuckTales 2 is on there, too. DuckTales 2 and is one of the more expensive games on Nintendo because it was so late. Well, I mean, that was late. I mean, that was like 92, late 92, maybe. Maybe even 93, honestly.
Wow.
One of the last releases for the system. Those are mainly where like your more expensive games are going to lie. And it had like Rescue Rangers. And these were Capcom games. And they, who made Mega Man 2, you know, are tremendous platformers that still hold up today. And so you can find those. I thought that was one of the coolest releases of the last couple of years was the Disney Afternoon games. Like Tailspin was in there too. So it was all the 8-bit games on the PS4 and the Xbox. And you can get that super cheap in like any sale for like $5.
Awesome.
And it has saves and you can rewind. And that's really the best way to do it because they're challenging platformers we talked about. They have to make the game last long.
Mm-hmm.
So they're challenging. But with today's tricks, you can play games like that. Now, I know you talked about having an SNES Mini before. I myself don't have an NES Mini. I missed out on that.
And, yeah, very hard to get.
They talked about reprinting those. I think you may still see them kind of. I always thought there was a licensing issue. They only had so long they could do it. I know they were only producing it for so long, but there was talk that they would eventually put more of those out. But the Virtual Console would be another way to play them today. And I have an old Nintendo myself hooked up that I play the games on, so.
Cool. I actually have a friend named Marcus, he's actually my brother's friend growing up. You know, he's a few years older than me, and I'm friends with him on Facebook, and he still has his, he doesn't have his original Nintendo, he has a top loader, like you said, and he still has the old cartridges, and he puts on Facebook what game he's playing, and, you know, it's kind of funny, he's just... Nintendo's where it is for him. You know, he's a very unique dude, so...
There you go.
I should probably tag him in a post for this one, so see if he's got a top 40 he wants to weigh in on. He's a guy who probably...
Maybe a top 40.
I know.
You know,
he's one of those guys that any game we mention, he probably knows what it is, you know?
Oh, I'm sure. And you got me on that Nightshade one. That was one of the... I don't know that one.
I remember how I came across Nightshade. Like you mentioned, you know, you would go to the video game store, or the video store, and hope to find Tecmo Super Bowl or something like that, and pulled back the boxes out there. Nightshade was one of those, well, I've got to rent something, you know, and I just stumbled on it. You know, it was nothing I sought out. It was one of those, I must have been looking for another game that wasn't there, and my backup wasn't there, my backup to the backup wasn't there, so I just picked something, because, you know, you had to, and I really had a lot of fun with it. So, another game similar to that, in terms of how I found it, was a game called The Boy and His Blob. Do you remember that one?
Oh, yeah, actually, I have a copy. I have my copy right here. I'm trying to sell it on eBay for $11.99 if you're interested.
Throw in some jelly beans and maybe I'll pick it up.
they put that one out for the Wii.
Okay.
Like updated with like really nice like character sprites, like hand drawn sprites. They re-released it for the Wii and you can actually get it on PS4 digitally too.
That's a fun game.
So yeah.
I could go on and on about the Nintendo.
We could.
This could be 100 games, you know. So
this may motivate us to do some other type of list ranking here, and I'm sure a lot of people are going
to
have theirs
them somehow.
Maybe. It sounds like a pretty good idea. Almost like we've had something like that before.
Yeah. The Brad and Chad show, I think, is what you're thinking
of. Oh, yes, that's what it is. Chad, I haven't talked to that guy. Yeah, that's it. Brad and Chad show, that must be it. But anyway, so, Jordan, well, thank you. And so let's tell the listeners, where are we going next? You get to pick where we're going next.
So we had some discussions because there's a lot of video game systems out there. And if we're going kind of in timelines, we've already been told that we should have done Intellivision and ColecoVision. You know,
we have offended the ColecoVision fanatics on the site.
A strong contingent.
Yes, of one. Go ahead.
So if we go, you know, timeline-wise, I guess next would be Game Boy, maybe the Sega Master System. But I never owned a Sega Master System. Did you?
Nah, I know, again, that really cool orthodontist, they had one. But they didn't have any games. With the Master System actually came with like two games on board it, so you could just turn it on and it would play like the games that was just built into the system.
Right.
So, you know, for the Sega Master System fans out there, we're gonna punt and we're not going to do Sega Master System.
Yeah, I don't think we can do it justice.
No, because we just don't have the. You know, I had one for a little bit. It later in life, and then I sold my whole collection with it because it just wasn't it always kind of felt like you were playing behind it. It wasn't the Nintendo. There were some games that were cool with it, and I played some of those and was like, this is not that great. Sports games weren't good either. So
if I were to go with my four, it would probably be the only four I ever played. You know?
Right. So. I would say that their Double Dragon was good, and so it did beat Nintendo's Double Dragon. That was it. And then what happened with the Master System was, as the Game Gear came along, was that, you know, 8-bit the games on the Game Gear would also be on the Master System because they were both 8-bit. Mm-hmm. So Sonic the Hedgehog would end up on the Master System. And even some later ones like Sonic 2 and stuff from the Game Gear made its way to the Master System. And the Master System was super popular in Europe, so it still had games. You can find like really weird stuff, like when they were just publishing for like South America too, where like Street Fighter 2 and stuff like that. Really weird region only stuff for the Master System. But yeah, we're gonna punt on the Master System. We talked about portables. Mm-hmm. Then maybe we do like a Game Boy, Game Gear hybrid type show.
Yeah, just kind of lump them together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just lump them together to talk about some portable memories. Because I think that was a poignant part of our childhoods with gaming, too, was, you know, that was one of the first systems that we had bought for us because it was like, well, we want you to be able to play it on the go, too. Like, they're trying to find, like, how many uses you can have for it.
Right.
You know, play it in the car and all this stuff like that. So, with portables is one. And then, of course, do our 16-bit. And I think we'll do both Super Nintendo and Genesis. Absolutely. Can certainly do that.
Yeah. So, I guess the question is, do we go Nintendo or Genesis next? I think scientifically I could just flip a coin right now and we could call
it. Yeah, go ahead. Let's do it.
All right, heads, we go Genesis. Tails, we go Super Nintendo. Here we go. All right, we're going to go with the Sega Genesis next.
That works aesthetically, too, so we're alternating Nintendo.
Yes,
it worked out great.
Head back to Nintendo.
Then we'll head back to Nintendo. So we will we'll talk a little bit about some of those games I just mentioned, the name drop, the Sonics and whatnot, next time around. And as you guys think about your top four, some of those defining Genesis games, I think it'll be interesting, too, because as you pick up people's childhoods, right? So, like, Nintendo was ours into the 16-bit. Mm-hmm. But nowadays, like, people that are out with disposable income, like the Nintendo 64 was really big for them.
Yes.
And there's an interesting wave with retro games, too, with how their popularity. So I missed the Atari wave. But again, everyone that played an Atari, when they got to be in their mid-20s, it was like, Atari's great. And they start buying up Atari stuff. And then in 2011 area was like all the Nintendo people, right? They're in their late 20s now, and it's big on Nintendo. And then there was a wave where it's like, oh, 16-bit stuff's really expensive because those kids are now adults with disposable income, and they want to go back and play. And now we're more into Nintendo ones. So point being is, as we get into Genesis now, we're gonna hit a new age demo that listens to our shows, and we thank you for listening. So we're certainly curious with your childhood memories. Now, we're going to be a little bit older for these, like 13, 14,
yeah,
with even more time on our hands.
As we enter the Sega Genesis. Yeah.
Yes, because we could be left on our own, and we had more time to do absolutely nothing. So we played a lot of Genesis. And,
that's for sure. Brad fell in love with the Nintendo because it had two buttons. Wait till you see that Genesis remote.
Wait, exactly. And that Super Nintendo, well, we won't foreshadow the Super Nintendo one, so.
Yeah.
But anyway, well, thank you, Jordan. I appreciate it, as always, and we'll see you guys next time.
All right, take care.
paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, along with Main Event, Survey Says, the Monday Night Wars, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, as well as Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network podcasts and pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Match of the Week podcasts, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Through the Years, Worldcast, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Center Stage, and Letters from Kayfabe, plus much more. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as Talkin' Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, NBA Team, PTBN Play, Sunday Groove, Breaking Balls, and Lucha Undead,
as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans
with the hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and Marvel Age Podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including the Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback today. All these shows, plus others, available at PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We'll be right back.